We're doing lyrics in the rejoinder music now. All right. Was not expecting that.
Coming up in the world.
Apparently, or something. Welcome back to Canucks Talk. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz here. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Mobile Kintech studio here at Rogers Arena. Kintech, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews, sore feet. What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is, of course, the Dunbar Lumber text line. And we are now very pleased to be joined on the line from ESPN. We love having him on the show. He tolerates coming on the show. He is the great Ryan Clark. Ryan, what's going on, man?
Not much. How are you two doing this afternoon?
We're doing very well. It's officially October. We're just over a week away from the start of the regular season. The Canucks made a big round of cuts today, so it really feels like we are so close. Only the one preseason game remaining. We're so close to actually getting some real NHL hockey underway, which is very, very exciting. So let's start with the Vancouver Canucks. And, I mean, I know you were high on them throughout most of last season, of course, famously picking them to beat the Oilers in the playoffs. How do you see them stacking up with the powerhouses in the Western Conference coming into this season?
Famously
for our listeners.
For sure.
It seems like the Canucks are in this place, and we've talked about it before, that this year is about showing last year was the new normal. And when you look at how the Western Conference landscape has changed, it's them and it's the Predators that people are looking at. And you have to ask the question, what's next? With the Predators, that's a little bit of a harder question to answer because you could see where the Predators were structurally. It was just a matter of how do they get more goals, but also how do they get more players with playoff experience? They went out and did that in the offseason, and now it's a question of, what's realistic for a team that's going to be adding, while there's some important players, it's just how's it all going to work? Because you're going to have combinations that have never played together before. With the Canucks, yes, you've seen players leave, players come in, like Jake DeBrusk, but the core is still there. And so now it's really about seeing what does the second full season under Rick Tocchet look like? Because for all the conversations about Thatcher Demko being hurt when he may or may not be available, the reality of it is this. We've seen the Canucks win a playoff series without Thatcher Demko. And if you can win in what's the most difficult environment in the season, then you should be able to win in the regular season. And that's not taking anything away from the regular season, but it is to say that you can win in the playoffs without him, then you should be able to manage in the regular season because this is what the elite teams do. Colorado has done it the last two regular seasons without Gabriel Landeskog. You're going to be one of those teams that if you're serious about contending in the West or the East, you have to be able to win games without your best players. And that's just it. As well, they are sort of figuring out that whole situation with the Canucks. It's really about can they make the next step, especially when Dallas is still there, Colorado is still there, Edmonton added even more. We just talked about Nashville. Vegas has questions that it's got to answer. And then you have to wonder about those teams such as the LA Kings and Winnipeg Jets, where are they getting back into the postseason, or are they going to be among those teams fighting for a wild card spot that may or may not get in?
Ryan, when you think about the changes that this Canucks team made, right, the loss of, for example, Zadorov and Lindholm, is this team better in your mind entering the season than the one we saw depart the postseason last year?
It's hard to say for this reason, because one of the big questions we kept asking about them was, could they get goals? And that was something that was an issue throughout the second round against the Oilers. There were times when they got goals. There were times where they struggled to get goals. There were times where they struggled to get shots. And yes, that's more of a conversation about the system. But it seems like what they were able to do by getting Jake DeBrusk was add goals. And so, again, the core and the bulk of what they do is still there. And the thing is, if you look at how they were able to adjust on the fly last year, as we talked about a lot last season, with reconfiguring their defensive structure, bringing in defensive personnel, they've shown that they can make adjustments throughout this season. And if you're them, it seems like the biggest adjustment you're trying to show is in those really tight games, how do you find ways to not only consistently get shots, but you're able to get goals. Because, again, when they get a lead, they can play with a lead. They know how to defend. It's just a question of can they score? And it seems like that's the biggest thing that needs to be answered. And so in terms of are they a better team, you would think that they could be, that they would be because of the experience. But, again, it's about seeing sort of how do those new pieces sort of fit within a team that the expectation for them is now different.
When you think about the Western Conference and how they stack up, you know, we used to do Pacific Division tiers with you all the time, Ryan, but now we're like no longer doing the months of evergreen hand-wringing about whether or not the Canucks will make the playoffs. But now we're sort of aiming our sights higher. How do you tier the top teams, let's say the top six or seven teams in the West going into this season?
It seems like the place to start would be the Edmonton Oilers, and how could it not be? Again, it's not saying that there aren't questions. There certainly are, but they go out and after Jeff Skinner. They add Victor Arvidsson. They're able to make some moves around the edges, given sort of their cap space limitations. So you would think that it would be them. Next would be the Dallas Stars. Three conference finals in, what, the last five, six seasons? Their team that, yes, has some questions to answer, but the biggest question facing the Dallas Stars is, can they win with this current iteration? Because when you look at their cap setup for next season, they've got some hefty, hefty, hefty decisions to make. And it starts off with Wyatt Johnson. Clearly, he's going to get a contract. He's the future of that team. But with him being an RFA, it comes in the same offseason that Maverick Bourque's an RFA, who's a rookie, and people are curious to see how he's going to look. Then you've got the whole conversation piece around Jake Ottinger, who's going to be an RFA, and what he's going to get paid. And considering what's going on in Boston and New York at the moment, it's going to be a fascinating time to see what goalies get in the next 12 months. But even more than that, you have to look at the fact that Matt Duchene's a UFA, but the big one is Captain Jamie Benn and his $9.5 million coming off the books. So Dallas would be up there for all those different reasons. Third place is where it gets really complicated, because the Canucks, the Avalanche, the Golden Knights all make an interesting case, as do the Nashville Predators. And with the Canucks, what puts them in that position, again, it's the core. It's the fact that you've seen them get to the second round. It's really just a question of can they get the goals? And it's not to say that all this falls on Jake DeBrusk. It doesn't, but he's a big part of this. Of course, seeing if Elias Pettersson can rediscover sort of that consistency in the second half of the season that made him so dangerous. What you're going to get now from Dakota Joshua, now that there's a new level of expectation for him. Danton Heinen, the addition there, is another person who can add that secondary and tertiary offense. So, again, there's questions. And even with someone like Daniel Sprong, where we've seen Daniel Sprong explode for goals in this league. So, again, it's just there's that. But then it's like, how does that work with Colorado, where you don't know when Gabriel Landeskog is coming back? But also it seems like it's the same question that it's been with the Avalanche since they've won that Stanley Cup not that long ago, which is, do they have the secondary scoring? Do they have the tertiary scoring? Can they get more out of everyone than just their stars? And then also, if and when will Gabriel Landeskog come back, and what will Valeri Nichushkin look like? And so, yes, there's questions as every team faces them. But with the Avs, it just seems like it's the same question it's been the last 2 years. With the Golden Knights, you talk about a team that lost a ton in the offseason. Now, yes, you still got around a dozen or so players left over from that Cup run. You're now going to get a full season of Tomas Hertl, and we've seen what Hertl is like on teams where he's had support and teams when he hasn't had support. And a team like Vegas, you think he's going to be able to do a lot. But what do those young players sort of look like that are going to be trying to prove themselves? Like, what does Alexander Holtz look like in Vegas? What does Brendan Brisson look like in Vegas? What does Victor Olsen, yes, he's 29, but what does he look like in Vegas? Especially when one of the hallmarks of Vegas, and there are many, is that when players do come there, they find ways to not only adjust, but they find ways to thrive there. And then it turns to the Nashville Predators, which we just discussed. You brought in Steven Stamkos. You brought in Jonathan Marchessault. You look at the addition of Brady Shea, Luke Shen. You sign UC Saros for that long-term deal. This is a team that's built to win now, and we've seen the jump and the strides that they've made. Because think about it. It was just 18, 24 months ago we were asking the question, is this a rebuild? Is this a retool? And now we're asking, could they conceivably win the West? And it seems like that's where the Canucks kind of fall is. There's that Edmonton and Dallas tier where they're more of the knowns because we've seen it over time. And even with Edmonton, there are questions because, remember, they started last season on a slide, people wondering what's going on with the Oilers. And then they bring in Chris Knobloch, and it's like, oh, what can't they do, essentially? And they damn near did everything. So it seems like those are maybe the one, two. But in terms of who's that third, there's a lot of reasons why you could say it's the Avs or the Canucks or the Predators or whomever. But at the same time, there's also some conversation points about why it may not be either. But either way, they're still in a stronger position than those teams beneath them, like the Winnipegs and the LAs, which even before Drew Doughty's injury, the Kings had some defensive questions to ask about how do you replace Matt Roy, because you're talking about someone who was second in ice time, who led them by quite a bit, and shorthanded ice time he's got. And now you take up Drew Doughty, which for all the things people said about Drew Doughty, he finished with a career-high 15 goals last year. He was second in the NHL in ice time. He led them in power play time. He led them in minutes, 5-on-5 as well. He was third in shorthanded minutes. That's a lot for one person, and that's a question they've got to answer in a year where if they get to the playoffs, can they get beyond the first round?
Ryan, you know, you've mentioned a couple times, and certainly it's been a big talking point here, right, the questions about can the Canucks score goals consistently enough when they're in those, you know, if they find themselves in a playoff series against another one of the contenders in the Western Conference. And, you know, it's really interesting because Rick Tocchet has spoken a lot so far and, you know, even over the summer about how he wants to generate more off the rush, allow the players to be a little bit more creative, take some more risks. And the team also went out and tried to add guys who can do that, right? Jake DeBrusk, Danton Heinen has that speed, Kiefer Sherwood, Daniel Sprong, of course, we know what he can do as a goal scorer. How much risk is there for a team like the Canucks who had so much success really relying on that defensive identity? Not that they're all of a sudden saying, okay, we're going to forget about that. They still want to be a defensive team first and foremost, but just how difficult is it for a team to try to move the needle slightly in favor of the offensive side of things without kind of sacrificing their bread and butter identity from a really successful season last year?
What you said is the more time you spend talking to coaches in the league, the more you hear them talk about that need to keep the defensive identity but still score goals. It just seems like for the Canucks, it's just a matter of how will that transition work, because we've seen teams like Carolina do that. And people have even said Carolina to a fault because, like, well, yes, Carolina is a really strong team defensively. We've also seen in the postseason where a lack of goals has been an issue for them at times. And again, with the Canucks, it's just, not to sound like a broken record here, but it's a wait-and-see approach, because is it something that they could potentially achieve? It looks like they could. They're one of those teams that people didn't know what to think last year, and then lo and behold, they were good. But even then, when you think about Tocchet's first season, I mean, they won 20 of their 36 games or 34 games under Rick Tocchet. So you could kind of see that, okay, he had something going, but the point being is, can they find a way to make that work? The answer has to be yes, because if it's not, then it really makes it difficult for them to want to take the next step, because you look at all these teams that we've talked about that compete for the Stanley Cup. Edmonton, for all the goals it scores, one of the biggest things it had going for it last season was that penalty kill. It was absolutely electric for him at times. And even though the cup final against the Panthers was literally a series of extremes, and the extremes when the Oilers had their defensive structure going, they had their defensive structure going, and they were really hard to beat. Dallas found that out. Vancouver found that out. So there was a consistent theme. So it can be done. When Vegas won its cup in its first year under Bruce Cassidy, it was the same thing. Like, yes, Vegas wasn't perfect in certain areas, but when the postseason came along, there were moments when they could shut teams down, and it found success. Colorado, the same thing. And so it can be done. It's just a matter of how long will it take? Will it take a month, 2 months, the whole season, the postseason, next year? Who knows? But it's a question the Canucks got to get answered if they're serious about wanting to win a Stanley Cup with this current core.
It's so crazy when I think about the playoffs last year, Ryan, because it felt like at the pointy end of each series, like when Florida's against New York, for example, you get to this moment in these series. You got to the moment in Game 6 and 7 for Edmonton against Vancouver. Certainly you got there quickly with Dallas after, you know, they took that lead on the Darnell Nurse gaffes in Game 4 of that Western Conference Final, where one team takes over And it's like the other team at that point, there's nothing there offensively. It just kind of looks like you need like a lucky break to sort of get the upset when these teams that are really elite, like at the pointy end of these series, sort of start to throw their fastball. Did you
see
that?
What's the question? I'm struggling. What's the question?
What do you think about that?
Is that what you're getting at, though, in terms of what the Canucks need to do to generate more offense?
Yes, it's being able to have those periods where you can certainly control the flow and the pace of the game, but it's also knowing that even when you don't have control, you still look comfortable being able to play a defensive game, a game within your structure that works, knowing that when you have the opportunities to go score, you go try to take the most of them. Now, again, the hard part with, you know, identifying a team like that is it took years to get there. And it seems like the best example of this would be the Florida Panthers, because we think about the transition from Joel Quenneville to Andrew Brunette, and the Panthers were score, 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 but they get into the postseason, and that scoring, for as prolific as it was, it really couldn't translate. You make a coaching change, you bring in Paul Maurice, and over time, that's a team that went from still being able to score, but also one that had a two-way presence about them. Yes, injuries were a big issue for them in that first run, but last year, as we saw, not only were they able to stay healthy for the most part, but they were able to play a consistent brand, and it's what made them so hard to beat. And so it's something that, yes, we're seeing teams doing, but it's something that it takes the time, it takes the personnel, it takes the coaching, it takes the structure. But to think it can't happen for the Canucks, it could absolutely happen. As for when that timeline is, that's the billion-dollar question.
Ryan, I got to ask you about the probably the most interesting storyline league-wide right now, which is, of course, the all of a sudden very public drama between the Boston Bruins and Jeremy Swayman, and, of course, Cam Neely with the $64 million comment, and then Lewis Gross releases a statement saying they're hitting pause and taking a few days to think about. It seems wild because he is such a talented player, and obviously they've already moved on from one part of their really successful goalie tandem, but has the door all of a sudden opened here that, you know, Jeremy Swayman might be signing this big next deal with a team other than the Boston Bruins via a trade?
It's so hard to say because it's just so early, because it seems like anytime you think you might have an understanding of what's going on with that situation, suddenly the calculus changes. And it's like that old Roddy Piper line, and sure, Thomas knows it. It's because it goes, what is it? Just when you think you have all the answers, I change all the questions. And when it comes to the Bruins, the argument has been this should have been done a long time ago. The minute you moved on from Linus Ullmark, you should have had a deal ready to go right away and not take the summer, because it was clear this was paving the way, both financially and from a playing time-wise, that Jeremy Swayman was it. Like, yes, there might be still a tandem because that's the NHL, but he was clearly going to be the lead in that tandem, if not one of those goalies, potentially on that border of like a Vasilevsky, a Hellebuck, a Saros, guys who play more than 60 games in a season. And so the fact that it hasn't gotten done, it does raise questions, but it also raises even more questions about, well, what is realistic? And yes, there's the disputed dollar amount, what was out there, what isn't, but it does raise a question of, well, what will it take? Because the two highest paid goalies in this league are $10 million goalies in Andrei Vasilevsky and Connor Hellebuck. Ilya Sorokin's third at what, around like 8-5. But again, that's in total cash, not necessarily in AAV. But the point being is goalies are getting paid. And yes, the Bruins, they know they have to pay him, but it's about paying a goalie that, for as proven as he is, there are still questions, because Andrei Vasilevsky, the only question with him at this point is how many more Vezinas and Cups will he win? With Connor Hellebuck, it's how many Vezinas can he win? How many more Vezinas can he win? Can he win a cup in Winnipeg? And truthfully, what will it take for him to be considered to be the greatest American goalie of all time? Because when you look at his numbers and you compare to other American goalies, it's a fascinating conversation. It seems like with Jeremy Swayman, the biggest question for the Bruins at this point is, can this work over the long term with him being the main person? And he showed you last year that it can, but again, it's about getting an understanding of your return on investment if you're the Bruins. But here's also the reality: finding goalies that can be one of the biggest reasons you win games is a hard thing to do. Florida, it took them years to find them one in Sergei Bobrovsky. The Avalanche have gone through a rotation of people before they've now settled on their current option of Alexander Georgiev, who has won 40 games. And to bring things a little bit more local, like, let's take the Canucks. Like, there is a reason Thatcher Demko is a big damn deal, because when he is healthy and going, he's one of the best goalies in the league. And for everyone who followed the Canucks, yes, you were able to go as far as you did in the playoffs without him. But that big question is, if Thatcher Demko had been healthy last season, .. And so if you are the Bruins and you've gone through all this uncertainty with who replaces Bergeron, who replaces Krejci, can anyone really replace them? How do you make the numbers work? It's why you moved on from Taylor Hall. All these different sort of moving points. It's about getting roster certainty. But again, it seems like for them, the certainty, you had the chance to take care of it a long time ago. You didn't. And now it leaves questions about what's going on, especially at a time when, as we just said with Jake Ottinger, Igor Shesterkin, goalies are not only up for deals, but they want to get paid. And whatever one guy gets paid, others are going to look at. And if you're Swayman and they're reps and you look at what UC Saros just got, you've got to be asking yourself, our guy is younger, so why can't he make the same, if not more?
Ryan, awesome to have you back on the show, man. We look forward to doing this throughout the season. Thank you, as always.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
That is Ryan Clark from ESPN covering the NHL, nationally weighing in there at the end on the fascinating Jeremy Swayman and Boston Bruins drama that really flared up in a big way this week.
Woodley called today on our show yesterday when it was sort of breaking live when he said,
like, "Don't, that was the wrong step for a guy like Jeremy Swayman." Yeah. That sure seems to be the case.
Good call. Good call by Kevin Woodley.
That's a man. Just the fact that a trade for it, like, you don't see players like that get traded. Right, you know, that young with that, with already the accomplishments under their belt, and I know he hasn't played that much, but when he has played, he's been so good. It is so rare to see a realistic trade like that, or for to see a trade like that feel like it's going to be a realistic possibility. It's just wild that the Bruins find themselves in that situation now. Batchelor is going to join us on the other side. I don't know why I called him Batchelor. I usually say Brendan Batchelor or Batch. But anyways, Brendan Batchelor will join us on the other side. But as you assigned to him, he did ask Rick Tocchet about the health of Pew Suter and Nikita Hirose. Here's the update, courtesy of Batch. He says, Pew Suter is being evaluated after getting banged up in the game last night. Per Tocchet, the coach also says Akito Hirose is feeling better today after suffering a concussion against the Flames on Saturday. So that's the latest on the two guys who are on the roster but were not at practice today. Pew Suter getting evaluated after getting banged up last night. Akito Hirose feeling better after suffering a concussion against the Flames on Saturday. All right, Brendan Batchelor will join us next here live in the broadcast gondola at Rogers Arena, his home away from home. He's back. That's coming up next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.
Miss any part of Halford and Brough in the Morning? Subscribe to the show wherever you get your podcasts and don't miss an episode.
All right, welcome back to Canucks Talk here at Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd, Thomas Drantz, live from the Mobile Kintech Studio here at Rogers Arena. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. The Bridge Street Dunbar Lumber and Ladner has moved to Progress Way in Tilbury's Industrial Park. More room, more product, more awesome. Details at DunbarLumber.com. Sorry, I was telling you don't concern yourself because I'm just going to throw to Tocchet.
Oh, yeah.
You were like panicked. You're like, oh my gosh, we're back on the air. And I was like, no. Chill out, man.
I wasn't at all. I was celebrating a result.
All right. Anyways, Brendan Batchelor going to join us momentarily here. But first, let's hear, we might not play the whole thing, but let's at least hear a little bit after a very interesting practice for the Canucks from the head coach, Rick Tocchet. Here he is.
It's been 5 and 7 days. There's a lot of people around. So now this is the first time we've got some numbers where I thought the practice, for the most part, was really good. So, we got, 8 days before the opener, and now we start to build our team together who are here and go from there.
Rick, how intense are these next 8 days going to be? Because you really haven't had that much of a veteran lineup in any of the games that you've played. A lot of guys have only played one game. How do you see them playing out?
Well, I mean, as a coach staff, we have to have drills. We're situational. But you're also looking for players to make sure that the details of the game – you don't have to kill guys out there, but you have to, you know, you got to get to the net. Things like that, that you don't get game action that you have to do in practice. You know, that's the thing when you have 5 and 7, 2 back-to-backs, you know, you got to be cautious. You know, the last thing we do is people getting hurt. But saying that, these next 8 days, we got to strategically how we're going to do it and a couple days off in between and, you know, get ready for the season.
What did Lekker Mackey show you? Rick, and how can he benefit from going to the
He's just a sneaky guy. Got a great shot. You know, he's a talented kid. You know, he's a, you know, when you look in the organization, you're looking for those type of guys, you know, game changers. You know, he's, you know, obviously he's knocking at the door. But there's good things in that. Abbotsford's got a good coach in Manny. Could play a little inside more, you know, come up, you know, he even said to us today, more 50-50 pucks, he's got to win. That's the next level for him. But, you know, who knows? He might be back in 30 days or he might back in at the end of the year. I don't know. But we got to make sure that he gets the proper development and the proper coaching, and he's going to get that down there.
You get excited by the Baines goal and then what Radu's done in the circle and with his release. Yeah. But it's much more than that, why they're still here, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, Rat's centerman takes draws. You know, he's – you know, you look at guys like, can it be sustainable? You know, there's a couple of coverage things he made. Like, that wasn't mistakes. It's stuff that he's going to have to learn. So whether it's here or in Abbotsford, you know, he's making a hard decision. That's the one thing. 2 years ago, you know, there wasn't really hard decisions. Now there are. So, you got to credit Jim and Patrick for creating and RJ, Ryan Johnson, creating more depth than harder decisions. 2 years ago, I don't think there was many hard decisions.
I know you've had a pretty good relationship and some respect for Phil DiGiuseppe.
Yeah, how hard one.
Yeah, how tough is that?
Yeah, I mean, he's a solid guy. You know, he's had a really good camp. There's numbers involved. There's a lot more to it. You know, the cap and this and that. There's a lot of, you know, LTR is over my head. But, you know, I don't think, you know, I hope he doesn't get picked up, to be honest with you. But he's a guy that I still think if he doesn't get picked, he's in the mix. Like, you know, so. You know, he's just an unreal guy. So that's a tough one.
What about to Pius Suter today? Just where was Pius?
Yeah, he's being evaluated. He got banged up there, I think, on the scuffle there, I think. So he's getting evaluated.
Do you have an update on Hirose?
He's feeling a bit better with the concussion. But it's, you know, those things, you know, 2 days from now, or he can feel better. So, I really don't.
You talked yesterday about JT Miller wanting to work on, you know, work on stuff during camp, and that's why he hadn't played. You said, is he going to play on Friday?
Yeah, he'll play Friday.
He's not dealing with it, though, is he?
No, there's just certain things that I want him to be ready for. He came in great shape, and I just didn't want to jeopardize a couple little things. It's not injury-wise, and he's, you know, I don't think he's ever had a bad practice. He's pushing the pace out there, so I'm not worried about him, you know.
How many tough decisions do you think you still have ahead of you with what we've seen?
Yeah, I mean, you got to pick. I don't know exactly, but we're going to have to probably, if things aren't, you know, maybe there's something in the works, but you might have to put another guy on. These are tough decisions, you know, and you got to play it out. You know, you always want to be strong at defense and centerman. You know, then you got to go from there. That's what I always felt. So we got to make decisions on that, but also on play. You know, some guys are pushing jobs.
That is Canucks head coach Rick Tocchet, part of what he had to say to the media after practice today at Rogers Arena, and one of the guys asking those questions, especially the ones that Thomas Drantz requested about Pius Suter and Akito Hirose. He is the voice of the Canucks here on Sportsnet 650. Joining us in the broadcast gondola, he is Brendan Batchelor. What's going on, man?
Not too much. How are you guys?
How weird does it feel to see Drantz sitting in your spot?
I've seen it before. It's fine. Okay. I think the famous trade deadline
happened right here. Yeah,
a couple of years ago was in this booth.
Right.
So.
Yeah, what did we fight about again?
I don't even remember. It was the Horvat trade.
And something super important, I'm sure.
Yeah, it was something to do with the Horvat trade and the direction the organization was taking after acquiring Hronek. But
fair enough, I'm sure I was
water under the bridge. It's all good.
With Rick's answer there, the last thing we heard from him, I want to ask you about, where he's saying, I think you want to build out from the center and on defense. I find that interesting given the path that this organization took this summer, where they tried to keep Lindholm but weren't able to. They tried to keep Zadorov but weren't able to at that price point, and ultimately pivoted to adding depth and speed on the wings. When you think about Ratu, when you think about sort of where the Canucks have landed here, do they have enough on defense and at center, especially when you consider what you saw today at Rogers Arena?
Do they have enough? That's an interesting way of putting it. I think they will make tweaks, certainly, to the blue line at some point this year. I think, Rick Tocchet likes the big defenders that are hard to play against, and we see that. I'm not convinced that a Forbert Desharnais pairing is going to stand the test of time. So I think that's an area where you're going to have to tweak. But in terms of, building out a top four, Hughes, Hronek, Susie, Myers, I think that's a solid base to build off of, and they had a lot of success with those two pairings, having a lot of success last year. Down the middle, Ratu makes things interesting, but and fans aren't going to want to hear this, I'm less and less convinced that he's going to make the team. And, as the 13th forward today, I think that's an indication of where things might be trending for him through no fault of his own, through no lack of execution of his own, but through a numbers game and a salary cap situation and trying to figure out LTIR. And the reason Drance asked me to ask those questions is because they are probably the two most important questions for what the opening night roster is going to look like. Because if Pius Suter or Akito Hirose have to go on IR, particularly in the case of Hirose, who then wouldn't be able to go down to Abbotsford, that's putting you into LTI unless you want to expose someone like Noah Juulsen to waivers.
Right, or expose both Juulsen and Friedman. And
if you want to go with no extra bodies, at that stage.
Or you play a forward short. I mean, the decisions that you'll end up potentially having to consider in the event that there's one more injury here beyond Demko and Joshua, they get pretty interesting, for sure.
So Suter being evaluated today, I guess we'll see if he's able to be back at practice this week, able to play in the last preseason game, what that means. Hirose, a concussion, you don't like hearing that.
No.
Tocchet says he's feeling better, and they hope that he'll feel better in a couple of days, but with concussions, you never know. So getting back to the initial question, though, I think they'll have to add on the blue line. I think they could be okay at center, assuming health. I think now that Ratu has emerged as an option, is Miller, Pettersson, Bluger, Suter the absolute best four centermen that you could go into the year with? No, I think, Elias Lindholm would have been a nice addition in that regard, but it's passable. It's fine. Those guys will be able to execute. We saw them do it for most of last season. And in fact, not that I'm going to lay all of this at the feet of Lindholm, but when he arrived was when the Canucks sort of started to struggle and things trended in the wrong direction in the second half of the season. So I know we could talk about PDO and shooting percentage and all these sorts of things, but they did fine with Teddy Bluger and Pius Suter and, Niels Omon being spotted in there as bottom six centerman last year. So to start the season, I'm not concerned about it. In the longer run, do they need to make an addition there? Maybe. Can Ratu emerge as a guy that helps them level up the center ice position in the bottom six? I certainly think that he could. And unfortunately for a guy like Ratu, and this is not unprecedented in Canucks history. I think, Drancer, correct me if I'm wrong, I believe Troy Stecher in his first year was sent down despite obviously being one of the best six defensemen in camp.
He played two games in the American League.
Yeah, and he was up like 5 days later and never went back. So just because a guy's not on the opening night roster doesn't mean he doesn't get into the NHL. I mean, Niels Omon was sent down to start last year, and then he was relatively quickly recalled and never went back. So, for people that have liked Ratu's preseason, I know the head coach has as well. We know that the head coach wants a right shot center. So even if it plays out this week that Ratu isn't on the roster, if they are able to avoid going into LTIR, it doesn't mean that he's not up here relatively soon if they have any sort of injury. And in fact, would be my front runner to be the first call up in that scenario. And then if they do go into LTIR, then guess what? They've got a lot more flexibility, and maybe he is here to start the regular season.
Did you read that into what we saw lines-wise today, that truly, on the Canucks depth chart at the moment, Niels Omon remains ahead of Ratu?
I think only because of the salary cap.
Or waivers or whatever.
Or waivers or whatever. Yeah, like because of the salary cap situation, because of not wanting to lose a player on waivers for nothing.
Reasons.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I would say. Yeah. Now, I guess it depends on the role, though, because Ratu has been playing with Hoglander and Garland through the whole preseason, and Teddy Bluger was back in that spot today. So if you're looking at it from that perspective, Niels Omon kills penalties. Niels Omon has more of an NHL track record. Is that part of the conversation where they're saying, okay, well, because Ratu's not going to get that top nine role that he's been in throughout the preseason, does it make more sense to send him back to Abbotsford to have him play games and to use the penalty killing, tried and tested, or at least comparatively tried and tested NHL centerman in that depth role? But at the same time, like, let's assume they stay out of LTIR. They probably have to send another forward down on waivers, right, too, or send another forward down. That could be Arshdeep Bains. That could be Neil Zolman. It remains to be seen. So I don't think Neil Zolman is necessarily out of the woods yet, but the fact that he was the centerman on that line and Atu Ratu was the 13th forward, I think kind of tips their hand. And whether it'll be Zolman or Bains could literally come down to whether Suter's healthy or not, because Zolman can play center or the wing, but he's played center for them most often, and Bains has had a good preseason too. So to me, assuming they don't go into LTIR, which is not a fair assumption to make at this point, I think we're looking at Ratu going down and Zolman and Bains battling for the last forward spot.
And Bains still being here, I'll be honest, it surprises me a little bit, mostly in the context of Phil DiGiuseppe going on waivers, right? And, you know, you heard Rick Tocchet just in the little snippet we played talk about, well, I mean, we all know, right, how Rick Tocchet feels about Phil DiGiuseppe. He really trusts him, really likes him, and that's what he was saying, really hopes he doesn't get picked up. I mean, is it fair to say now that Arshdeep Bains has kind of leapfrogged Phil DiGiuseppe on the big picture organizational depth chart along the wings?
Yeah, I think you have to say that. Otherwise, DiGiuseppe wouldn't be on waivers today.
Yeah.
And it'll be interesting. Again, like,
Tocchet sounded legit crestfallen, though.
Yes. Well, and to be fair to Phil DiGiuseppe, this is the third time since he joined this organization where he's had a good camp and been sent down anyway.
Totally.
Yep. So
Tocchet called him an unreal guy.
Unreal guy is high praise.
Yeah.
He's like the final boss that you have to clear if you're going to be an NHL player. You know what I mean? Like, you spend your whole life sacrificing, working, improving. You have a great summer. You add a step. And then you get to camp, and it's like 6'1", Phil DiGiuseppe, just can do everything, never makes a mistake, is the final.
Relentless checker,
the final training camp boss.
Yeah, I think that's a great way to put it, and that is a great guy to have in your organization. And Tocchet alluded to that when he talked about, I really hope he doesn't get claimed, because obviously he can come in and play serviceable NHL minutes for you. He even played top 6 minutes for them last season, which I think is more of a reflection of the lack of depth they had on the wings. But it's great to have a guy that your young players have to beat as a final boss to earn their opportunity in the NHL, because we hear so much about, you know, we can't gift young players anything and they've got to earn their ice time. Phil DiGiuseppe is a guy that has made Arshdeep Bains earn his spot still with the Vancouver Canucks here as we sit on October 1st.
Is that an interesting consideration with Ratu Amon? Like, what's the argument for Atu not having won that spot?
There is no argument for it other than losing Zolman on waivers.
Long-term waivers.
Well, yeah. I would say the penalty-killing aspect for Zolman.
That's
well,
true, too.
Right? That's the hockey logic you would use to keep Zolman, even though it probably comes down more to non-hockey things other than that. One of the interesting things at practice today, not in terms of who's getting sent down and who's going to stay up, I mean, I think we all expect Daniel Sprong, obviously, to be a part of the NHL roster, but he was skating with Elias Pettersson and Jake DeBrusk. Of course, you go back to training camp in Penticton, Lekker Mäki started there. Sprong's always seemed like an option, but we haven't really seen it for any significant length of time throughout preseason here. How long do you think his tryout there is going to be? How firm of a grip does he have on that spot right now?
Yeah, I asked Rick Tocchet about Sprong. It was right at the end of the scrum, so it was the part that you guys didn't get a chance to play before you had me come on and fill up your airtime instead.
Yep.
And he said, you know, obviously he's an offensive player. It's intriguing. If those three guys can gel together, they could be a very good line for us. But, and I think this was the key part, they need to play on the inside. They need to get to the middle. And that's something that we could say about Elias Pettersson when he's gone through struggles here. I don't think there's a concern there for Jake DeBrusk, but Daniel Sprong can and has been a perimeter player at times in his career too. So you're looking at that line and you're saying, can Sprong change his identity? Can Pettersson find his game so that they're not a perimeter offensive line that ends up, you know, working it around the outside and passing it and setting it up and cycling and that resulting in zone time, but not a lot else? there needs to be a bottom line. And, you know, Sprong's two-way game also has to come a long way, and that's going to be a consideration too. But I look at that line and I say, if Daniel Sprong can go on that line and that line can score goals, whether it's him or someone else, that's ultimately going to be the deciding factor between whether Daniel Sprong stays as a top six forward or not with this group.
I'm excited to watch Sprong and Pettersson. I think that's ultimately the right decision here. Like, I feel like they've landed on the thing that I most want to see from an upside perspective.
Randeep and I do our podcast in the booth, which, by the way, you can download Canuck Central podcast feed.
Good
cheap
plug.
Get it in there.
Rate and subscribe wherever you find your podcast.
Exactly.
Podcasts.
And we did penny stocks going into camp.
Penny stocks.
Like penny stocks for, like, who are you putting your money down on to invest in as someone that will come out of camp in a good spot? And I chose Daniel Sprong, and I said from the outset that I thought that would be a good spot for him. But again, as Tockett alludes to, it's going to come down to his willingness to commit to the non-negotiables and that line's ability to not be perimeter. And if they can get to the middle of the ice and generate offense and score and hem other teams in and tilt the ice like those guys will be capable of, because they're all very skilled offensive players, then you might not have just found a good partner for that line. You might have found a great third player on that line, but there's a lot of onus on Sprong there to find something in his game that he hasn't found yet. And, you know, last week I was talking to someone down in Seattle that follows the Kraken very closely, and they were saying skilled offensive player, scored goals. They had a tough time getting him in over 11 minutes a night, which is kind of the conversation we had about Andrei Kuzmenko. At certain points, we had it about Nils Höglander last year. So I don't think it's an open and shut case that Sprong's there now and he's going to keep that spot. But ultimately, that decision will be up to him and how he's able to perform on that line.
I'd say the other thing with that line, and as you say, look, they have to get to the inside and for Sprong specifically, take care of all the staples in Rick Tockett's system, of course. But for all of the emphasis on generating more off the rush for the Canucks, that line looks like the one that's maybe best suited to do it, right? With the speed of DeBrusk brought in and the speed and the creativity of Sprong paired with Elias Pettersson. So not that that's all they can afford to focus on or should be focusing on, but it feels like that has to be an area where they are consistently dangerous, right? You're trying to add that to the identity of the team. That's the trio who probably has the best shot of doing it. So yeah, you got to take care of those other things, but I mean, I think there's a fair amount of pressure on that group to be offensively dangerous, shift in, shift out, right out of the gate here.
Absolutely. And, I mean, for both of the top six lines, but especially, you're right, that line, they have the ability to strike in transition. Those are guys that can produce off the rush if they buy into this attacking mentality that Tockett has been preaching and, you know, the pouncing on opportunities and making teams pay for them in transition. Those guys could be well suited to do it.
Have we seen that in preseason?
Not enough, but also we haven't seen a full representative lineup or anything close to it in preseason.
That's true.
So, no, I haven't, but also half of the roster of every game have been AHL or junior players. So I don't know. And Tockett sort of admitted he got into talking about the way the preseason was formatted, and he's like, you know, building considerations are a thing and it's no one's fault. But he did say we'd probably look at trying not to have five games in
seven nights
next year. And I think the way that schedule was built out, again, not necessarily through anybody's fault, but you only play one home game, then you go to Abbotsford, and then you have your three road games in a row before getting your last home game, kind of impacted the way that they deployed their lineups to the point where I don't think we can read anything stylistically into what this team has done in the preseason yet, because we haven't seen this team on the ice in a game in terms of what they're actually going to look like. And that's why Friday is going to be so interesting to watch.
What do you think about the fact that the main guys haven't played together yet? And do you think, given the overall condensed nature of that preseason slate, that they were eyeing this week and these three practices that they'll get to have in the lead up to Friday as sort of the time to gel?
Well, it's not even the practices over the next few days. I think it's the entirety of the next, what?
8 days.
8 days, nine days until the opener. Like, Tockett talked about this too, about there's going to be a lot of time for us to practice, for those guys to work on the power play in particular, which we only saw the PP1 unit in the way that we expect it to be formulated today. in practice. Now, have they had guys skating behind closed doors on road game days and had a chance to work on it before now? That's entirely possible. We don't know because we're covering the game group and not the non-game group. But I would almost look at the next 8 days like another training camp, yeah. Except now you're down to your roster. Now you don't have 50 or 60 guys hanging around, and these are the guys that are going to be here with one or two exceptions when they have to cut down. And this is their chance to have their training camp today, potentially tomorrow or Thursday. I think they probably have one of those days off, but we'll wait and see. And then after Friday, I imagine they're here on the weekend, working through the weekend too, and into next week to get ready for the home opener.
Working through the weekend.
I know.
They better not.
That means we have to as well. I know.
Just before we let you go, we've talked a lot about Nils Höglander over the last couple of weeks on the show here, and I think it's pretty interesting that he has now fully stepped into that the other part of the duo with Connor Garland in Dakota Joshua's absence. And I just think, given how much Tocchet relied on the Joshua Garland duo last year and how he's consistently referenced them as really key in that chemistry together, like, that strikes me as a pretty significant vote of confidence that it hasn't been a rotation of other guys with Connor Garland.
No.
Really, it's been, hey, it's going to be Nils Höglander. I think his performance has warranted it, but I think that really signifies a significant increase in trust from Rick Tocchet towards Nils Höglander.
Yeah, I think Nils Höglander, if you had to pick one player that is the biggest winner coming out of training camp in the preseason, it's Nils Höglander. Because you're right. You know, coming into the year, we were like, what's Höglander going to be?
He
scored 24
for minutes
goals.
And he was getting healthy scratched at times
in the playoffs.
Year, right?
In the Edmonton series, Linus Karlsson went in for him for a couple of games. And so coming into the season, we were saying, okay, you know, what's Höglander going to be? This is kind of like, obviously, we thought it was going to be make or break literally for Pod Colson before he mm-hmm. was traded. But we were saying, like, Hoaglander's the next guy on that list. You know, if he can't solidify a spot, then who knows where his future goes. And there has been no conversation about him through training camp because it has been unquestionable that he has now solidified that spot. And, you know, we'll play it out down the line and see what happens with him when Joshua comes back, because I think that's a different conversation and an interesting one too. But for now, like, there's no doubt Nils Höglander's had a great training camp in the preseason games that he's played in. He's performed well, and it would shock me if he doesn't start the regular season on that line next Wednesday. And full credit to him for coming in and having a great camp, which, to his credit, he usually does. Like, he's always been a guy that has a good camp. So the real test for him is going to be finding that level of consistency so that trust that he's built in the preseason carries over game to game into the regular season.
There's 64 million reasons why you're our favorite.
I wish, man. If there were 64 Sorry. Million reasons, I would not be here.
I was talking about 64 million reasons why we love you.
Oh, okay. Well,
you can't buy that level of affection.
No, you can't. That's true. Thank you, Vince. It's worth more than money.
No, it's
but 64 million would be sweet.
Probably take the 64 million.
It's definitely not worth more than money.
He's Brendan Batchelor. Batch, thank you as always, buddy. We really appreciate it. We'll chat again soon. Lots more to come at Rogers Arena this week leading into the Canucks' final preseason game on Friday. And, of course, we will be back tomorrow to cover it. It's the crossover on Wednesdays tomorrow. That's coming up on Wednesday on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.